And with Derek Lewis, he's been looking forward to finding someone else just in the meantime, since we've got Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou 2 in the coming weeks. However, no clear indication who is going to be up for the title shot. Now, he beat Curtis Blaydes a few weeks ago with a stunning second round KO, brutal uppercut. But he's made it clear, you know, even on the Joe Rogan Experience, actually, he says, I want to stay busy, you know. I think the perfect matchup is Ciryl Gane. Ciryl Gane is coming off a win. It wasn't the most exciting fight for a lot of the fans, just because it was incredibly, incredibly frustrating with a guy like Rozenstruik, who's incredibly powerful, but was quite tentative in actually throwing that power in case he overextended and got himself caught in the exact same situation with Gane. I would love to see that happen. I think it should happen, you know. I just want to know currently, where is Derek Lewis currently in the rankings after beating Curtis Blaydes? Because Curtis Blaydes, if he beat Derek Lewis, he was said to be the next one in line for a title shot. But we've also got Alexander Volkov, who is said to also be in line for a title shot in the future. The heavyweight division is a bit funny right now on who would be next afterwards, since we've also got John Jones, who's supposed to have the next title shot against... it's all very wishy-washy. Like, the main thing right now for the UFC is, look, John Jones will have the next title shot against Stipe Miocic, the win of Stipe versus Francis, right? But who would be next after that? Who is the one that is not in the, you know, the hype position and is genuinely the next person in the light heavyweight rankings?
Well,
who would that be?
Well, Derek Lewis is second.
So not light heavyweight, heavyweight.
Sorry. Heavyweight, yeah. Derek Lewis is second in the rankings, so he's sort of in the picture, but he's already had a shot at Daniel Cormier back when he was double champ. Mm-hmm. So he's sort of already been in the picture as well. Do I think the thing is Derek Lewis has never fought Stipe Miocic, but he's fought Francis, but that wasn't really necessarily a good fight because. Well, Derek Lewis did a podcast with Joe Rogan this week as well, which have you seen it, by the way?
I have seen
it. It's good stuff. Yeah, he talked about that he had issues with his back and his hands, and he had issues with his ankles and all that sort of stuff. And he was, and then Francis was sort of coming into that fight after his loss to Stipe, and he's just, and then he sort of, people were saying that he was sort of like scared, he didn't want to get hurt.
He wasn't scared on being hurt. He was scared on being embarrassed because he was embarrassed against Stipe, and he was scared because he lacked conditioning. Now all you see now is Francis Ngannou doing conditioning. Like, he has a YouTube channel. He's always doing aerobic conditioning workouts. When he was wrestling against Stipe, or kind of, you know, trying to not get out wrestled, he was gassed, incredibly gassed. Mm-hmm. And that's fine for someone like Francis Ngannou because he never really goes past the first round. He's always got that extreme knockout power. When he fought Derek Lewis, we were expecting a huge barn burner, similar to Ciryl Gane and Rozenstruik. Now, neither of these fights with incredibly heavy hitters had an incredible trade. There was no impressive kickboxing striking match happening. It was very tentative, very calculated, and kind of just similar to point fighting and things like that, honing them up against the cage.
Yeah.
So, Derek Lewis has came off an impressive knockout against Curtis Blaydes, and he holds the most knockouts in heavyweight history. So, arguably, he should be next against John Jones after John Jones is, you know, scrap. But he wants to stay busy because that could take a year until he actually, you know, the situation is resolved. So, who can he fight? A lot of people have put up Ciryl Gane.
Ciryl Gane.
Or you could have Volkov, because he's fought Volkov in the past.
There you go, because Ciryl Gane is, I would say, the most pure option, because Ciryl Gane did a really, really good job against Rozenstruik. So, and Ciryl Gane's sort of upcoming, you know, Ciryl Gane's fast. He's so fast for a bloody heavyweight. And Derek Lewis, he's got that mad amount of power, you know, he's got dynamite in his hands, his jiu-jitsu's getting better. So, I reckon that sounds like the most purest option, because or Volkov versus Gane could be another option as well, because I don't know if they want to have a rematch between Derek Lewis and Volkov, because Volkov like got knocked out by Derek Lewis in the, I think it was in the last round on the Khabib versus.
Oh, but however, Volkov was winning for that fight. It's very interesting because it's weird with MMA maths. Volkov was going to beat Lewis, right? But in those last few seconds of the round, Lewis knocks him out.
Mm-hmm.
Like he hits him with a straight overhand, rocks him, hits him again. Volkov goes down, hits the deck. Lewis swarms him. Fights get called off. It's a TKO. However, Volkov then loses to Curtis Blaydes, who Derek Lewis actually just beat. Then Alexander Volkov goes on to beat Walt Harris, goes on to beat Alistair Overeem. What's happening here? You know, Volkov should fight someone again. I don't think it's Derek Lewis. I think Derek Lewis versus Cyril Gane is an incredible fight. That's an incredible stand-up fight because, you know, you're most likely not going to see much wrestling there. They're two big, powerful men.
Because not even that, you've also... Because Curtis Blaydes has already fought Volkov and beat Volkov.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I feel like, again, it's the most pure option.
Number two versus number four.
Number two versus number four. Not too far apart, considering in terms of fought similar opponents. So, and both are rising stars.
Yes, and it's interesting, the dynamic as well, because Lewis has been in the UFC for a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
You would consider him a UFC vet. Also, with the amount of fights he's at heavyweight, most number of knockouts at heavyweight as well. Then there's Cyril Gane, hasn't had that much experience, but he's definitely someone to keep an eye on. He's climbed the rankings very quickly, only been professional MMA for 3 years, and he's already number four, right? It's very reminiscent of Francis Ngannou's climb, because the only one to beat Francis Ngannou has been Stipe. Climbed the rankings very quickly, coming from humble beginnings, trying to go into boxing, then went into mixed martial arts instead.
Oh my God, that story was insane, Francis.
Incredible storyline. Now, Cyril Gane, I believe that it would be an incredible fight against Derek Lewis. Keeps them both active while, you know, Stipe is going to fight Francis, and then following that, the winner has to fight John Jones. That's two fights that's going to take... We don't know how long John Jones is going to take until he is happy with where he's at his heavyweight, weight limit. So when are we going to properly see that? We'll probably see that closer to the end of the year, maybe September, October, November, maybe December, right? In order to see John Jones fight for the championship belt, Derek Lewis versus Cyril Gane is what makes sense. Number two versus number four happens sometime in 2021. They both get two fights that year. The following year, they can fight for the championship belt. It makes sense. Derek Lewis versus Cyril Gane, it would be an incredible matchup. And
who's your take?
This is going to sound crazy considering that Lewis was the underdog against Blaydes.
I know.
Yet knocked him out.
Yeah.
And MMA is something that just seems not to work against Lewis because he's just so powerful. He's so strong. He's always doing strength and conditioning. And he's just got dynamite in his hands. But Gane, I feel like he has the range. He has the power. He's able to wrestle on the ground. And he's very intelligent. And it's not that Lewis isn't intelligent, but he sets things up really well. He taps, 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 goes hard. Lewis is very patient, but they're one-hitter quitters every time he throws, right? And expends a lot of energy. Gane's way more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Gane's had 3 years in the in professional MMA. It's crazy to say, but I take Gane.
Oh.
I take Gane beating Lewis if that happens, for
sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, I understand your argument. Yeah. I got to say Lewis, though.
I think that he's got the equalizer punch. Mm. Like, he's against Volkov, he was losing that fight dramatically, right? None of those rounds were going towards Lewis. I wouldn't say they were that competitive, to be honest. But he was having issues with the reach, and he was having issues with the height of Alexander Volkov. And that similar kickboxing style that Gane has is going to be issues if this fight against Lewis takes place. So Derek Lewis versus Cyril Gane, I believe, should happen. And I know you're taking Lewis because he's got that one-hitter quitter. It's the equalizer. You could be 2, 3, 4 rounds down, and that fifth round hits you with one clean punch, and you're on your ass. But I think Ciryl Gane, even with his lack of experience, his incredibly intelligent, impressive style is something that just attracts me to thinking that he's going to win.
Plus, he's on an 8-fight win streak. You know, he's well-rounded. He's got 3 wins with submission, 3 wins with knockout.
And there's
he's
some confidence behind being undefeated, I think.
Yeah, especially when you take down a legend such as Junior Dos Santos, who's out of the UFC now.
And Alexander, Alistair, oh no, who did he fight? It was JDS, and who did he fight after that?
Good question.
Jozinho Rozenstruik, that was it, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I really want to see that fight. I really want to see that fight.
Yeah.
Next week. So the week before UFC 260, is going to be Derek Brunson versus Kevin Holland. I'm so stoked for this. Incredible matchup in the middleweight division. Who are you taking in this fight?
Well, they're both quite evenly matched. Derek Lewis loves to shut down hype trains, so that's what he's quite known for. He's got so much experience behind him, but I can't help but like having eyes on Kevin Holland. Like, he's such an active fighter. Like, 2020, regardless of what you say, but I would say if there was top 3 fighters of the year, Holland is definitely in the picture, because
he was my number one. He was my number one pick for 2020 fighter of the year, for sure.
Mm-hmm. We should start getting a little last set awards.
We should. I think he had 5 fights in 2021, I believe.
Yeah.
And so if he was able to get that number 6 one against Hamza, which he was trying to angle for, imagine if he had 6 fights in 1 year. It would be insane. Absolutely insane.
Because Kevin Holland is ranked 10th. Derek Brunson's ranked 7th. They both got pretty similar records. Derek Brunson's 21-7. Kevin Holland's 21-5. But the thing is, Derek Brunson's got more wins by knockout, you know. Most of Kevin Holland's fights go to decision. So how I can see is Derek Brunson might clip something away within those rounds 2 or 3, but if it goes the distance, I've got a feeling Kevin Holland's gonna win. That's more a calculated decision. So I want to say my money's on Kevin for this fight.
My money's on Kevin because I know you said that most of his fights go by decision. However, Kevin Holland's funny in that he's only just started to kind of do strength and conditioning. He's only just started to take it seriously. And in 4 out of his last 5 fights have been by KO, right? The only fight that didn't go like exactly as he planned being a finish was a split decision win over Darren Stewart, which was his third last fight. Now, Derek Brunson, his striking is a bit scrappy. Yeah, a lot of the time, these strikes are kind of just to pummel you, tenderize you a little bit, and kind of get you thinking about the strikes more than you are about the takedowns. He wrestles you, takes you down to the ground, and he puts you in very difficult positions, and he is he's quite an aggressive fighter. He puts a lot of pressure on you, especially wrestling-wise. Kevin Holland, he fought Jacare Souza, who managed to take him down.
Yeah,
Kevin Holland, even off his back, managed to produce an incredible amount of power from those hammer strikes and knocking out Jacare Souza. Beating Jacare Souza, you know, especially his success in Strikeforce and in the UFC, I rate that win with Kevin Holland. Now, I know Derek Brunson, he's beat in Heinisch, his last fight over the Edmund Shabazian, who was meant to be a new UFC prospect. Still a bit too young and a bit too green for fighting Derek Brunson, to be honest. I do think Kevin Holland's last 5 wins, 4 of which are by knockout, speak for themselves. And I think Holland will knock out Brunson early. I think maybe 2nd round. I think it will knock him out in the 2nd round early. You never know. However, if Brunson does take him down, I wouldn't be surprised. However, Holland is very good off his back. He trains under Travis Luter. So obviously his Brazilian jiu-jitsu is going to be top-notch. And Kevin Holland's style is very unique. He's got very long limbs. He can produce a lot of power from these incredibly long limbs. And even with his, you know, kickboxing background paired with his kung fu background, his Kung Fu black belt background. I see him winning the striking and being very good off his back as well. So I would take Kevin Holland, and I believe by second round KO, even though he does train under Travis Luter, I believe he's had multiple submissions in the past. However, in the UFC, hasn't been prominent. So I think he will be proficient on the ground off his back due to his training under Travis Luter. However, I think he will KO Derek Brewis handedly in the second, maybe third round. Not quite the first round. I think Brunson's conditioning will be quite high level. Mm-hmm. The second or third round KO for Kevin Holland, I think.
Yes. Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see next week. I'm waiting for the odds to be released. We got the poster already. It looks pretty crispy.
It looks incredible, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how quickly they get these things out. Like, as soon as one event's over, all the stuff's lined up for the next event. Look at that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
Anyway, so you wanted to fight about next week on the card will be Gregor Gillespie versus Brad Whittle. Now, why did you want to bring this up?
Well, Gregor Gillespie has actually had a huge amount of time off. His last fight was a loss against Kevin Lee. You remember that? I believe it was in the first round, head kick KO.
Oh,
brutal.
Yes.
He was straight out, knocked out, unconscious, hit the cage with the back of his head, slid down, had to be called off. It was a nasty KO to watch. Gregor Gillespie is always known for being effective with the wrestling, but his striking as well. And his aerobic conditioning is very high level. You're always watching him doing conditioning workouts. And he's a unique fighter, to be honest. I'd love to see him. I want to see him very soon, however. I'll have to wait until next week. Brad Riddell, coming out of City Kickboxing, fellow teammate of Israel Adesanya, Kai Kara-France, Carlos Ulberg, and things like that. Mm-hmm. Interesting fight for Brad because although he is a great fighter, he's not yet ranked yet. And he's looking to enter the top five by fighting Gregor Gillespie now at number 15. Gillespie was a little bit higher earlier. However, he's dropped a little bit due to a little bit inactivity. He lost to Kevin Lee.
But that's his only loss.
Gregor Gillespie had a huge amount of hype around him. He was undefeated before fighting Kevin Lee. However, Kevin Lee used a very low stance in that fight. Looked like he was going to, with that stance, mask his takedowns. But he then, perhaps made Gregor Gillespie kind of think quite a fair bit about the takedowns a little bit too much. Went up high with the head kick. Hit him flush on the chin, and it almost looked like he hit Gillespie up in the air. It was that perfect timed shot with incredibly powerful legs. So he knocked out Gregor Gillespie pretty brutal finish. It will be interesting to see how he fights Brad Riddell. Since Gregor Gillespie, he's had a bit of time off. He's had a huge amount of time. Can you remind me, was it 2019 that he lost to
2019, November 2nd. So he's had well over a year and about 4 months off now since his last fight.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this in the past, but when fighters take a loss and they take some time off, they sort of really like put on so much skill.
A huge amount of growth, especially for Gillespie, since it'll be 2 years. Well, let's say maybe just over a year, to be honest. But that's a long hiatus for a fighter after a pretty brutal knockout like that. Brad Riddell, 6-fight win streak at the moment, hasn't broke the top 15, hoping to make a name for himself against Gregor Gillespie. An interesting matchup. Now, I don't believe that Israel Adesanya's coach, Eugene Berryman, will actually be able to be in Brad Riddell's corner. He won't be able to, because UFC 259 came about so quickly, he flew out for Israel Adesanya, obviously he flew out for Kai and for Carlos as well. However, by flying back to New Zealand, doing the quarantine, he won't have the time to do the quarantine, come back, and then be able to corner Brad Riddell. So, interesting how that goes with who will be in Riddell's corner. I'm not certain. Riddell coming from City Kickboxing and from Tiger Muay Thai. Very good on that on the feet. Gillespie, very good on the feet as well. It'd be interesting how any grappling takes place, to be honest. Riddell, purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So obviously proficient on the ground if he does get taken on his back or takes down Gillespie. I don't know who I take in this fight, to be honest. The only factor for me right now is like Gillespie has fought those in the top 15, whereas Brad Riddell has not. So it's an interesting challenge for Riddell. But Gillespie's came off a pretty brutal KO, right? I do question how does that affect your performance in your following fight when you haven't been active? You know, does that kind of... That's got to be Kevin Lee's best
KO. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was knockout. The one that, I mean, even the commentators were losing their minds over it. Well, one thing we got to put on the bat, one thing we can sort of credit to is Gregor Gillespie. A lot of his wins have either come by submission. He's got quite a few knockouts through punches. But one thing that's important for him is that he's always had a very, very aggressive controlling style, controlling fighting style. It was because he came from a really strong wrestling background. He was an NCAA division champion, national champion, 149 pounds, and a four-time NCAA champion, All-American, and three-time EPL and PSA conference champion. So he's pretty much competing a lot of types of wrestling. And in the years that he's been active in as a fighter, MMA fighter, has been from 2012. So he's been fighting for just under a decade. To take some time off, he allows him to really sort of develop his striking. But it was just his defensive striking, because one of the criticisms, I believe, I was just reading about that people have of him, is that he's so used to going on offense in terms of and defending himself in terms of grappling, but he's not that used to defensive striking. He's not used to checking kicks. He's not used to blocking kicks.
Offensive striking is quite good.
Yeah.
He does have knockouts in his record. However, his grappling, due to his wrestling background, was the main thing that could have played an issue. Now, he fought Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee coming from a wrestling background as well. Able to neutralize a little bit of any sort of grappling that was going to occur. I believe also just because who he was fighting against, Kevin Lee, probably made him think, oh, he might take me down, right? He might not be wanting to trade with me. He might take me down just because of his previous loss beforehand.
Here's how good his wrestling background is. He has beaten Michael.
He has gold medals and fucking everything.
Yeah, he's beaten Michael Chandler in wrestling.
Yes,
but he's lost to Jordan Burroughs. But Jordan Burroughs is like the American. He's the American gold medalist. So, but there's some names on here that I'm looking at that are quite popular within the grappling world. So, one thing that's I love to see is when you see champions come over from. What is it, from other disciplines, and then they perform really, really well, and they play to their strengths in MMA. That just shows how the transition just works for them.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course. Yeah. Who would you say that you would take in this? Because Brad, obviously, coming off a 6-fight win streak, coming from City Kickboxing, although he won't have his head coach there, he's incredible on stand up, right? Coming from City Kickboxing and Tiger Muay Thai. However, he's got a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Obviously proficient if he ends up on his back or when he is on top. However, Gregor Gillespie, blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, very, very good wrestling base and does have that offensive power. However, we know that when he's put on the back foot, not as dynamic with getting out of the way of any strikes as well as checking kicks and checking catching punches. So who would you say that you would take in this matchup?
It's a hard one for me because I don't know that much about Brad Riddell. I want to say Gregor. He's taken so much time out of the sport, and Brad's last fight was on Adesanya versus Costa card, so he's
UFC 253.
Yeah, and he had a good 2020, a couple wins. He hasn't lost since 2018, so yeah, I'm gonna have to go, Gregor.
Right.
Yeah.
Another one, Ty Tuivasa. very, very funny guy.
We love Ty. He's a national treasure.
Yeah, he's going to fight Dante Almeyers. And that's going to be on the undercard just before Gregor Gillespie's fight against Brad Riddell. Interesting matchup. Ty coming off a one fight win streak against, I believe, Stefan Struve. Stefan Struve, following Ty Tuivasa's fight, actually he retired. Is he not 7 foot or close to 7 foot tall?
Incredibly
tall, but Ty managed to knock him out in the first round. And that was on the UFC. Which card was this? Ty's last fight.
It was on the Nkumaro versus Gaethje card.
UFC 254.
Yeah, 254. Yeah. Where he beat Stefan Struve. But it was important for him because he was coming off a free fight losing streak. He lost to DeSantos. He lost to Blagoy Ivanov. And he lost to Sergey Spivak.
Yeah.
I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah, with Dante Almeyers, though, he's on a one-fight win streak just like Ty. Yeah. However, his last two fights... he unfortunately lost one of those fights. He lost to by submission. As we earlier just spoke about him, Cyril Garn submitting him by heel hook. So, interesting matchup since both are on a one-fight win streak. Obviously, whoever wins out of this starts to increase their win streak and then starts to move up. Currently, I believe, are both unranked? I think both are unranked, actually, to be honest. Interesting to see this fight now. Now, Ty, we know he's coming from that Polynesian background. He's got dynamite in his hands. Incredibly powerful. To drop a man that is obviously got much longer reach and a lot bigger than you, you know, definitely his size was very imposing, Stefan Struve. Interesting to see how that plays against Dante Almeyers. Now, I'm just having a look at the stats here. Now, Dante Almeyers currently with an 8-4 record, while Ty Tuivasa has an 11-3 record. Obviously, being in the heavyweight division, both men are very, very tall people. Dante Almeyers, 6'6", 262 pounds. Age being 29 years old. Ty, I believe, is a little bit younger.
He's 6'2", age 27, 200, usually walks around 265 pounds.
So the main criticism from a lot of people about Ty was that he didn't have the wrestling ability that a lot of heavyweights do.
Well, he's a brawler.
He is a brawler. Whenever he does get into these striking matches, he's able to absorb a lot of punishment, but he's also able to throw some enormous punching power, right? And that certainly plays in his favor. But a lot of people can neutralize his significant physical attributes by taking him down and just having another heavyweight's body on top of you is incredibly harsh on your conditioning level, right? You can quite easily gas your opponent by imposing your will and your pressure and your weight on top of them by grappling them, which is what has happened in the past. Ty noticed that, after being on a 3-fight losing streak, that skid caused him to actually go to AKA and work on his grappling. You know, Daniel Cormier actually commented on it that Ty had been looking towards filling that void in his grappling ability so that he became a more well-rounded MMA fighter. And I think it worked really well because he was more confident in striking against Stefan Struve, even though if Stefan Struve wanted to, not that I thought he would, did want to take him down, he was ready and he was more equipped than he was in his previous fights. Arguably, if Ty lost that fight, he probably could have been kicked out of the UFC, on a 3-fight losing streak. If you lose against Stefan Struve, he's not ranked either. Most likely you would be on a 4-fight losing streak. We know what happened to JDS last week. He would have been taken out of the UFC. Dante Almeyers, he's on a 1-fight win streak. Prior to that, he had a 2-fight losing streak. Obviously, Ty being the shorter man, It can play a factor. However, in his last fight, Tai managed to press up the much taller man, 7 foot, Stefan Struve, up against the cage. And when he wasn't able to hit to the head like he usually was, he broke down the body. He continued to break it down until he was able to land those perfect shots against Struve and set Struve like flat on his ass and KO'd him easily in the first round. To be honest, I would take Tai in this fight, and that's not just because, you know,
don't want to be biased.
We like the Anzac fighters a lot. However, yeah. I would take Tai in this fight. I'm not certain on the betting odds currently. I don't believe they've been released yet. No.
Well, there's one thing I rarely trust the odds these days. I love it because the bookies are just, I don't really want. Unless it's something that I really don't, not too 100% sure about, and then I might turn to the odds, or if it's the other way sometimes, if I know a lot about these fighters and the bookies can sort of get it right, like it was Megan Anderson versus Amanda Nunes, like I'm pretty sure I knew right off the bat that Amanda Nunes is going to win, so the bookies just knew that as well, so that's why they heavily betted against Megan, so...
Yeah. Well, coming just, you know, finally talking, like just the final bit about the Tai Tuivasa fight is that, you know, I understand that his opponent is much taller than him by 2 inches taller, but he's got a much bigger reach on him. He has a 6-inch reach advantage being 81 inches. I understand that is a lot of, that's a decent amount of reach. However, in the heavyweight division, anyone can knock out anyone in that division. And we know that's so true when Tai knocked out Stefan Struve, and I firmly believe that if he's continued to work on his grappling ability, he'll be able and be ready to fight May as well. I really, really think so. Mm-hmm. I believe a lot of people are expecting that Tai will win. Hopefully, if he does continue to return back to the, you know, the critically acclaimed AKA under Javier Mendez. So yeah, I would take Tai Tuivasa, and I believe by...
I'm going to say knockout third round.
Second or third round knockout,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Most likely, it would be the second round, just because the heavyweights have a huge amount of body mass, burning a huge amount of calories, there's a lot of work behind moving those big, heavy bodies. So I believe second round, just because it's an incredible amount of power. That will start to decline as the rounds progress. But I think second round KO by Tai Tuivasa.
There's one thing I've got to bring up before we just go to the last point for today's episode. Sure. It was announced this week that Marvin Vettori and Darren Till will be headlining UFC Fight Night 11th of April. Mm-hmm. Right? Guess who else is on the main card?
Who?
Mike Perry.
Oh, really?
Mike Perry and Darren are going to be in the same building.
That'd be really... They can train together.
Yeah.
They can train together. It looks like they became a little bit more buddy-buddy after that thing.
Yeah. So Marvin, that
would be an incredible fight. Now, there's another fight that I want to speak about.
Yeah.
That's been confirmed yesterday, and I know you'll love it too. I put out a post about, you know, who should fight Islam Makhachev.
Yeah.
You know, should it be Tony Ferguson? Should it be Beneil Dariush? Or should it be, who's the third fighter that I put up?
There was Rafael Dos Anjos?
Yeah. And unfortunately for Islam, Tony Ferguson got swooped up and is going to fight Beneil Dariush.
That's right.
So
yes.
Tony is number 5, Beneil Dariush is number 9.
That's good.
Tell me your thoughts on this matchup.
Well, you know, I love Tony. You know, I get irritated at people. I got really irritated that people were just writing him off because, you know, he's lost to Gaethje, sustained so much punishment in that fight. He lost to Charles Oliveira, you know, busted up his arm. He had other health issues, and people are telling him, oh, Tony's going to quit because he's old. He's 37. So, but he's an OG man. He's been around for so long. He's had one of the best winning streaks ever. Beneil Dariush is a good fight for him because it's still a top 10 rank. Beneil Dariush is sort of a bit of a dark horse in the division because he doesn't really get many fights. But when he does, he actually really puts him away. He puts on spectacular performances. Mm-hmm. So you got two very high-performance fighters fighting up against each other. I see because Tony still has that high level gas tank. You know, he never gets tired. He's got phenomenal grappling skills. I see him going into a third round submission.
That's interesting, considering that we know Benil Dariush is known for, you know, also having incredibly trading matches on the feet. Yeah. However, Dariush is it will be a very high level grappling match, considering Dariush is he's competed in many no gi and gi Brazilian Jiu Jitsu championships, getting, you know, gold and silver medals in these championships. So it would be interesting to see how well Tony's you know, snap jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu skill sets up against Benil Dariush. It's a strange matchup stylistically.
On a 6-fight winning streak at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. While Tony is on a 2-fight losing streak, unfortunately, losing to Justin Gaethje by TKO in the fifth round, and then by Charles Oliveira by being completely dominated in the entire fight, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is Tony not tapping to that armbar, and it's insane. The one thing that guy has is conditioning and grit. He's just his mental fortitude is just so high level. He's incredibly tough. I don't really see Tony quitting in any fight, and not against Benil Dariush. So interesting to see how this turns out with Tony. Tony's not exactly getting given an easy matchup, and he's not been given an easy fighter, considering he's lost to Justin Gaethje and Charles Oliveira, arguably two of the very best in the top five of the lightweight division. So interesting to see that Benil Dariush does get his wish. Benil, he said, look, I keep getting all these people, they don't want to fight me. I want someone in the top five, you know, or the upper echelon of the top 10, right? Now he's got Tony Ferguson. He's made it to be in the works for May 15th on UFC 262. So it's quite a while away. But it's interesting. Who would you... So you would say you would take Tony in this match?
Yeah, I would say Tony in this match. Because I just can see him sort of like tiring him out or wearing him out or just putting on that volume of strikes. However, you know, Dariush has got a chin. He's got a phenomenal knockout history. You know, he had that amazing spinning back fist against Scott Holzman that everyone lost their shit over. So it's just... I mean, it's a good matchup because we know how stacked the lightweight division is. It's a shark tank. It's phenomenal, and it's just got so much talent. And I just feel like Tony needs something to get himself back into the debate, because I feel like he's been fucked around because of his injuries. He never got the Khabib fight. He's had the Khabib fight canceled so many times, and he went up against Gaethje and he wasn't preparing for a striker. He was preparing for someone who's going to win by grappling. And then he had his loss to Charles Oliveira, and just he deserves it's not what he deserves. It's about what a man like him, I know that he can work for. And I want him to get back into the picture, because I feel like his time's just been very unfair, because he was stripped of the title because of an injury.
Yeah, I believe he's a double interim champion. Yeah. The unfortunate thing is, he was, because he won the interim belt back. I know you took Tony, and I love Tony. I'm actually taking Dariush.
How dare you?
Yeah,
How dare you?
I think Tony does. He certainly weathers a storm, and that certainly becomes more and more often. Now I know he's got a solid chin, but there's been a lot of times in his career, when he's been rocked. You know, when we think of his fight against Anthony Pettis, he was losing that fight against Anthony Pettis, and then Anthony Pettis breaks his hand, gets awarded to Tony with Tony Ferguson.
We talk about that fight a lot.
Yeah, Tony Ferguson versus Donald Cerrone. He didn't really, you know, solidify that he beat Donald Cerrone. Donald Cerrone kind of took himself out of commission of that fight by blowing his nose with a broken nose, swelled up his eyes, unable to fight. Tony Ferguson took a huge amount of punishment against Justin Gaethje. And he also lost to Charles Oliveira, right? The thing that comes to mind is his win against Kevin Lee. You know, Kevin Lee, very good wrestling, but we are unsure about his level of high-level jiu-jitsu. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't have good jiu-jitsu, but it's not quite the high level that Tony Ferguson has, right? Caught him in a brutal submission hold, right? But he kind of was very upset with himself because he went straight into it. You know, he didn't quite defend it the way he should, and he got slept quite quickly in that submission hold, right? I feel like Dariush, being well-rounded, especially with his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu background, I think it will not result in Tony submitting him. I think Dariush will beat him across. It depends. If it's a main event, it'll be 5 rounds, right? So interesting to see how that will go, because Tony's conditioning will be very high level. If it's a 5-round event, I would maybe sway towards Tony, but if it's I would second guess that. I think maybe a three fight win streak will round fight will result in Dariush winning. I think so. If Tony doesn't have the ability to go across 5 rounds like he did against Oliveira, he won't be able to impose his will. And I think that I've got to sink in the Dariush. Whether it's a 3 or 5 round fight, I think Dariush wins. It certainly goes into Tony's favor because his conditioning is world class, right? Incredible conditioning and gas tank. But I've got to take Dariush in this fight. I think he will take this matchup for sure. I think he will. Naturally, being younger as well, 6 years younger, I think he's entering his prime, and I think he will beat Tony. I think he will, and I think it will be by decision. I think Tony's chin's too solid. I think Tony's grit is too much, but I think he will just dominate him. I think he will dominate him, just by decision.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Last point.
Yeah, yeah. So we've talked a lot about MMA today, but I signed up today actually for Binge TV. So
I was gonna say you're gonna watch it on Binge.
On Binge TV. Well, yeah, so Binge. If you're an Australian viewer, I would suggest signing up for your free trial with Binge TV, and that means you can go and watch the Snyder Cut in 4 days' time. So I believe it's on Thursday, March 18th.
Oh, okay, Thursday.
Lovely. Incredibly excited for that. It's they've released a lot of Snyder Cut teasers for each character. They've done it for Steppenwolf. They've done it for all the members of the Justice League. Interesting, they did one for Darkseid, and we were able to see Darkseid's Omega Beams, actually. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading about it. There's not... This thing right off the bat has so much drama around it because... Zack Snyder was coming, he didn't like Warner Bros, he's having issues with them, and there was a mess and drama on set, and they had so much footage that was filmed, and so much of it didn't make the screen, and because there were things that were missing, you know what I mean? It felt like they were trying to clunk it all in together.
Does this make you feel old? 2017 was when Justice League was released.
Yeah.
2017. Yeah. 4 years later, we get the Snyder Cut.
That's and it's going to be like a 4-hour preview.
It should be 4 different sections.
Yeah, 1 hour, yeah.
1 hour, yeah.
So are they going to release it all at once?
Unsure. I believe it will be all at once.
Yeah, because I'm looking forward to it because I just got a strong feeling this is going to be good. I want it to be good. There was so much footage that I want to see that they showed in the trailer but I didn't really see, and now they're going to focus a lot more on the Nightmare timeline as well because that's what apparently the next Justice League movie. But listen, if Zack Snyder does it right and if all the... He took a load of shit for years. If he comes out with this Snyder Cut and Binge TV's rankings go through the fucking roof and Binge TV
and HBO Max.
Yeah, and HBO. And HBO's money comes pouring in. Give that man full control and let him make another Justice League movie. If it falls flat on its ass, then Zack Snyder's just going to have to eat more shit And then, you know what I mean?
And most likely it won't happen. Then yep. There'll be recasts and things like that.
Yeah. In the wise words of Brock Lesnar, I pray that he takes chicken shit and turns it into a chicken salad.
Yeah. I'm incredibly excited. Have you actually seen the clip of the Mega Beams?
I have, yeah.
You have seen the
Mega Beams? I have. I've seen all the clips.
It looks good.
Looks good. I like it. I like the way the dark side looks too.
I like his voice. Ray Porter's voiceover is very good. Interesting though. Is Darkseid similar to Steppenwolf almost fully CGI? I believe he's fully CGI. Whereas Thanos with... who played Thanos?
Josh Brolin.
He was half CGI. Like they had the him and then they had the camera, similar to how they do the Hulk as well. But they put lots of dots and they wear the... all the equipment and things like that. The same way we got Spader with Ultron. And they're able to, you know, use CGI, but in a creative way where it's believable and more realistic what they look like. When it's fully CGI, sometimes their movements and the way they look is a bit weird. Same way sometimes Cyborg's body look sometimes in the Justice League looked a bit weird because it was almost fully CGI when it came with the arms and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Darkseid looks good.
Yeah.
He does look good. It's questionable what happens with his portrayal in terms of his body shape if it is fully CGI. It is strange to... I don't know if the fully CGI scenes work that well when it comes to... the way the characters look.
Well, one other thing that was different was the way that Steppenwolf looks in this new Justice League cut. In the old Justice League cut, he looks like he was wearing black armor and all that, but on this new one, he's got all these spikes around him and all that.
Yeah, yeah. So he has a form of armor, and there's actually not just Steppenwolf, it's another character. I can't remember his name, but he's also going to be another.
Yeah.
He's a hooded character who's. Another servant of Darkseid.
Yeah, hold on.
And he's wears a black veil and he looks quite good as well. So interesting that they're fleshing out this nightmare kind of timeline where they're set in the future where Superman, you know, it's similar to Injustice a little bit. It's a little bit of a mixture of Injustice and the nightmare timeline.
That's it.
Kalavak. So where Lois Lane is obviously gets killed or whatever and then we've got Superman.
Yeah, losing his mind.
Well,
that was one point. We've seen the animated movies of the Justice League, right? And the Apocalypse War. You've seen that one? So
very dark movie.
Yeah, yeah. Huh?
Very dark movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why we like DC, so. But the idea was that Superman turns over to Darkseid and allows himself to become brainwashed by him. Yeah. That was one of the theories to how they got to that nightmare timeline. But one thing that I really want to see as well is they want to use Barry a lot more because in the first movie there was that scene where Barry goes back in time to see Bruce and he goes, Bruce... it's Lois Lane. It was always Lois. She was the key. She was always the key. You were right about him. And then everyone was like, what the fuck is going on? You have to be a fan of DC. You have to understand and read the comics and the movies to understand the significance of what he was doing because Barry going back in time and breaking the timeline is very, very significant because they take the idea of time travel very seriously in the DC universe.
For sure, because that kind of sets up the Flashpoint paradox now.
Yeah.
I've just paused an image here from one of the teaser trailers, and you're able to see that Flash, there seems to be some form of explosion or something like that, and the Flash
is
there. So it looks like that may set up him running away from the explosion, similar to Flashpoint paradox.
Because that's what happened in the Flashpoint paradox animated movie, yes.
And the other issue is that apparently... the person that really ties together this movie, apparently, or the collection of four parts, is apparently Cyborg. Cyborg never really got true justice in the first Justice League, no pun intended. But apparently his story and his kind of character development and his arc, his own storyline, actually is what kind of ties the movie in really well together. And they'll flesh out, you know, his relationship with his father and the Barry Allen's relationship with Iris West. And we're going to see all these different pieces. We might even see a little bit of teasers with the Green Lantern Corps when they teamed up with the old gods to fight the version of Darkseid before he was Darkseid.
They're also going to include bits of the Green Lantern in... here's two things I know. They're trying to tease bits of the Green Lantern in the new Justice League movie, okay? And they're also trying to set up Martian Manhunter as well. Because Martian Manhunter was another one of the members of the League. He was one of the core members.
Yes, you could actually hear his voiceover and he says, I have a stake in this world.
Yeah.
I should fight for it. So perhaps that will be a little Easter egg at the end about Martian Manhunter, him being revealed. They haven't shown any of that in the teaser trailers, and it was not in the previous Justice League, so they have no reason to spoil that for the fans. So most likely that will be maybe an end credit scene or something like that.
Mm.
But I'm incredibly... It's going to be in 4 days' time. I cannot... And by the time this is released, it will most likely be 3 days or 2 days or 1 day. So if you haven't already, sign up to Binge TV or sign up to HBO Max. I know if you're not in Australia, sign up to HBO Max. In Australia, we don't get HBO Max. We get Binge TV and other stuff. So sign up to that and watch the Snyder Cut because it's incredibly good. It's something that I've been hyped for a considerable amount of time. We supported the Snyder Cut for... when we started this, and then it got confirmed, and we were incredibly excited.
We've been talking about it since the start of this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It was probably one of our first topics was the Snyder Cut. Yeah. So amazing that it's came to fruition. It feels so weird that it's 4 days away, and
I'm excited.
As soon as it comes out, I'm gonna try and watch it, but I'll have to move it around.
I wish we could do like a live viewing.
I'd love to do that too. Yeah.
But here's what we can do. All right, we can make a promise. We'll at least watch. I don't know what it is. If one episode comes out, we'll make sure we watch it and review it for next Sunday for next episode.
Yeah, we're unsure if it's going to be a part one and then next week it's part two or something.
I feel like
that.
That's what they should do.
Or it'll be a complete binge drop and it'll be 1, 2, 3, and 4 because they say they're dropping the Snyder Cut, release the Snyder Cut at this time, but they didn't say we're releasing part one.
Okay.
They just said, so it could be a culmination. We don't know. Maybe they could just release it, have all the hype around it, and then they can say, look, I know you're really excited for part one. Great teaser, by the way. 2, 3, and 4 come out at these dates. Hope you're excited. Done. So incredibly excited for Darkseid and the whole Nightmare arc, and especially just what they're doing with the storyline with, the Snyder Cut, for sure. Because we love DC and the Justice League, for sure. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify. And then you can also subscribe to us on YouTube as well. So we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook. We have so much social media. We release a lot of amazing clips on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But we also release a lot of really good content on Instagram as well. So if you want to see any, previews for any fights, any fight statistics, if you want to see any fights that have just been unfortunately cancelled or, fortunately just been released to us, then you should definitely follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and you're going to get an incredible amount of creative content down your way, especially if you're an MMA fan. And if you're not an MMA fan, you're going to have incredible content as well, not for our non-MMA entertainment, okay? So very much appreciate all our supporters. We hit 200 subscribers yesterday. We're very excited about that. I think we've now just hit maybe 209, 210 now. So slowly increasing. Most likely, if we hit 500, we'll do some form of giveaway again, maybe 1,000. But everyone that's a subscriber, thank you so much. We greatly appreciate it, and we appreciate every subscriber, every follower, everyone that supports the podcast, everyone that comments and shares. If you like the podcast, keep doing so because we do really appreciate it. We're trying to interact with as many as possible. So thank you so much, guys. I was talking very quickly, but thank you very much.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye, all the guys. Best. See you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.